makes sense.
Great morning, world. Great morning, humans. This is your boy, Dr. J.C. Dornick, a.k.a. The Dragon. And welcome to another episode of the Makes Sense podcast. Very, very excited to present you with part four of the interface response system. And we're going to make sense of healthy responses. How do we become the dominant force of our life and make healthy responses? I'm just so excited to be at this phase with you right now. For those of you that have been following along, as a reminder, we took the first bunch of episodes and we laid down the language and a lot of concepts and theories and ideas that I came up with along the way. And all of those things led me to the creation of this four-step process that we call the interface response system, which is just my way of paying forward what I figured out and that which helped me in a way that you don't have to take 52 years to figure it out. You just have to learn this four-step process. So we went through steps 1, 2, and 3, and we're on 4 right now. I'd love to start off with a quote from Stephen Covey right now. Just so cool to take a word that you say all the time and just break it apart and create a new meaning. So Covey says this, responsibility, but he writes it in the sense of writing the word response hyphen ability. So he says, responsibility is the ability to choose our response to any circumstance or condition. I love the idea of looking at responsibility as the ability to respond. Isn't that interesting? And isn't that what we're about to do? That's what step 4 is all about, is creating or cultivating this new upgraded ability to create healthy responses. Probably one of the most important and valuable skill sets that we can learn. We hear all too often that we have no control over the things that happen, but we do have full control over our response to them. My question is, do we? And to what degree? So we're going to get into that. So let's start off by observing those three words, interface response system. So as I said, steps 1 through 3, if you think about it, have been acknowledging the interface, the interaction between you and the things that you come across in life. That's what I refer to when I say the interface. So now, armed and aware of your unconscious and automatic response system, we're ready. We're ready to receive an upgrade to our new, improved one that better suits our goals and dreams. Just to pause on that for a second, think about what that means. I have no idea what kind of a response system is going to be better suiting your goals and dreams. And it doesn't matter what I think, right? The only goals and dreams that I care about are mine. It's just interesting to look at the idea that all you have to do is decide what your goals and dreams are and then create an interface response system that best suits it. The double-edged sword of that, if your goals and dreams right now are based on your belief of what your goals and dreams are, then you might be setting them very, very low and settling. And then you'll notice that your interface response system right now is in support of that. So your old system, as we say, goodbye to it. It had its perks and it got you to this place that we're sitting right now together. However, it was often inefficient and glitchy in terms of forward progress towards bigger and better things. If you're the kind of person like me that spent so much time and money on personal growth and self-discovery, always looking to break through to new levels of you, well, then you understand that. Sometimes it has to do with letting go of our old way of doing things. So now let's look at creating a more efficient one. Another quote, and this is a quote and line from the famous Cheshire Cat in Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. It's important now more than ever at this phase, step 4, to know where you're heading. And we just kind of led on to that a little bit. What your goals and dreams are. Some people refer to that as their North Star. And that North Star is something that's always going to be able to show us the way home if you know where to look and find it. So think about this. After all we've learned about your brain, and that was brain awareness perception, and the fact that it's been influenced by its programmers and the programming that it formed, and the fact that it has the ability to actually move about the world without you. We spoke about the idea of sleepwalking. Brain is fully capable of handling things without you, whether it's effective or ineffective. So can you see how easy it would be at this stage to find yourself thinking and assuming that you're consciously making decisions while still being persuaded by this society and all that we're still consuming daily. Did you not consume anything in society yesterday or today? Just because we're following along in this new system and it's becoming something that we're aware of and we know, remember the jacuzzi experience, it doesn't mean that we're not still living in the same world that's programming our minds. So what I mean is this, our brain is still extremely susceptible, even in the space between the stimulus, that conscious, untethered, non-persuaded, uninfluenced. Of course, it's still influenced and being persuaded to do certain things, but we're just a little bit more conscious, and we're also conscious of that. So it's still susceptible to responding to things that it interfaces with in a way that it thinks it should. So that's what I want you to grab right now. Even though we're in this space, and the idea is that we're going to just actually look at things the way they are, and the hypothetical is that we're going to respond to things in support of where we want to go and nowhere else. However, don't forget in this moment that your brain is very, very much still influenced with the idea of doing what it thinks that it should. So there's a fascinating theory that best demonstrates this, created by psychologist Todd Rose. Just love this guy. And he created this theory, and he speaks a lot about this. Great lecture, and I'll put it in the notes, from The Big Think on YouTube. He does a talk called Collective Illusion. Collective illusion is a scenario where most people in a group or community will go along with an idea that they don't necessarily agree with. They don't agree with an idea, but they perceive that the group agrees with it, which means that they'll go along with it. It's this illusion that a collective group of people believe in something, so I'm going to do it too. And the reason why they'll do that, they believe that most people in the group agree with it. The illusion is that we have the ability to assume and believe incorrectly that the group in itself believes something. The group doesn't necessarily believe in what you think the group believes in, but you assume and believe that the group does, so you go along with that. How crazy is that? What's interesting about this concept is that researchers have identified that the majority of the group doesn't actually believe in what you think they believe in, yet we still believe that the rest do. So isn't that interesting how a group of people could be believing in something and latching on to something and getting tethered to something that they all collectively think one another believe? But if you dig in, you realize that they don't really believe it. Naturally, they do this in order to fit in. They move with the herd. So I share this because this sort of collective illusion still possesses the power, even in this opportunistic space of conscious thought that you and I are in. Why do I keep doing that? I get you in this space, and I said, in this space between the stimulus and your program response, we have the ability to latch onto a conscious thought and make better decisions. Yes, that's true. However, we still have to continuously remind ourselves of the power of the programmed mind. Even in that opportunistic space of conscious thought, it still has the power to persuade us in our decision-making process. So here you are looking to make a healthy decision, and we're going to talk about that, but just know that you're still being persuaded. So now that you're aware of this, you can place a pause on that as well. We learned in step two to place a pause on our knee-jerk programmed response. So what I'm saying now is, even in the space after, when you're in that space of conscious thought, sometimes you'll notice something else going on, and that is the brain's ability to easily be persuaded because of that programming. I just find it so fascinating to think that I'm making a voluntary conscious decision and then catch myself finding that I was persuaded to do so. Let's talk about the Mandela effect right here. It's a perfect place to remind us of that, in case you've heard of it, or if you haven't, you're going to love this. So we've spoken a lot about this idea over past episodes called confirmation bias and our tendency to believe in things that are not true and then recruit things that validate it and discount anything that discredits it, even if they're right and you're wrong. So that's confirmation bias. So remember, this phenomenon arises from our brain's remarkable ability to fabricate and sculpt events based on our perceptions and our preferences. There's nothing wrong with this, as we recognize the ambiguity of truth in itself and how it lies in the hands of the beholder. We actually are the only ones that can decide what the truth is, but it doesn't make things true. Remember, we talked about the fact that nothing really exists in the absence of our observation of it. Yet to become aware of this, that's the key. The idea of becoming conscious is to become aware. So to become aware of this is a crucial step, as we tend to make shit up, don't we? And fill in the gaps of this nonsensical narrative of life. So an intriguing example of this is known as the Mandela effect. Such a fascinating phenomenon, and it happens over and over and over again on so many levels in different scenarios. The Mandela effect is a phenomenon in which a large group of people collectively hold a shared false belief about a specific event, fact, or detail from the past. The term originated from the widespread belief that Nelson Mandela, the former South African president, the belief that he died while he was incarcerated and held prisoner on Robben Island in the 1980s. I've actually seen and been to Robben Island. So fascinating. Despite the fact that he passed away in 2013, 33 years later. Remember, they thought he died in 1980s on Robben Island. He died in 2013, 33 years later in Johannesburg at the age of 95. So this divergence between the collective memory and historical reality raises intriguing questions about the fallibility of human memory and the malleability of our perceptions. Remember, neuroscientists are now saying that the human brain cannot necessarily distinguish the difference between something that it has fabricated or imagined from one that sits in this hypothetical baseline of reality that we call the known. So I want to share an excerpt from a great article that I read. I'm just going to read this excerpt because it's so cool. Read by somebody, a woman named Yasmin Saplakoglu. Hope I got that right. I'm sure I didn't. She's a staff writer with a magazine called Quanta about this subject. She writes this. Is this real life or is this just fantasy? So those aren't just lyrics from the Queen song Bohemian Rhapsody. They're also the questions that the brain must consistently answer while processing streams of visual signals from the eyes and purely mental picture bubbling out of imagination. Brain scan studies have repeatedly found that seeing something and imagining it evoke highly similar patterns of neural activity. Yet, for most of us, the subjective experience that they produce are very different. So here's what she says. I can look outside my window right now if I want to, and I can imagine a unicorn walking down the street, said Thomas Nazalaris, an associate professor at University of Minnesota. The street would seem real, and the unicorn would not. It's very clear to me, he said. The knowledge that unicorns are mythical barely plays into that. A simple imagery of a white horse would seem just as unreal. Why are we constantly hallucinating, said Nadine Dykstra, postdoctoral fellow at the University College of London. A study she led recently published in Nature Communications provides an intriguing answer to this question. The brain evaluates the images it is processing against what's called a reality threshold. Try to grab onto that, a reality threshold. If the signal passes the threshold, the brain thinks that it's real. If it doesn't, the brain thinks that it's imagined. So just use the unicorn scenario. If I imagine a unicorn running down the street, but that imagination does not pass that reality threshold, then I will be able to recognize that it was imagined. Remember, I said that the brain does not know the difference between something that it imagines and something that's really happening if that imagination gets past that reality threshold. My thought is this. We're trying to come up with a healthy response right now. Where is your reality threshold at this time? And to what degree has it been sculpted, that filter that you're running in your interface response system, to what degree has it been sculpted by your mother, father, teacher, preacher, society, and evolution in a way that permits certain things that you might imagine to pass that reality threshold and get into your bar? Remember, we were talking about the bouncer. Why is that important right now? Because here we are about to start making better decisions, and it's such a valuable thing to be able to do this right. That's why I'm taking my time. We're going to make better decisions, better responses. But what we're recognizing is that a lot of things that we think are true may very well be just imagined things that pass that reality threshold. So we were taught things our whole life. So your conscious mind, your that rational, logical part of your mind might still be believing in things that simply aren't true, and also, more importantly, inefficient and unsupportive of what it is that you want. Once again, become aware of that. Take your time, unless a car is coming at you. Get out of the way. So our perception of reality is not as objective as we might assume. Our brains do not function as passive recorders, but rather active interpreters of the world around us. Our memories, perceptions, and beliefs are subject to various cognitive biases, such as confirmation bias and the availability heuristic, which can contribute to the formation of false memories and beliefs. And if you're still carrying false memories and beliefs, however they've passed that reality threshold, and you think that they're true still, and you're holding on to them, they're going to affect your decision-making process. So this is why personal growth and accountability coaches, when they guide their clients, you'll notice this common trend. When they guide their clients to set goals, we'll say things like this. If you couldn't fail, what would life look like for you? They do this because they know that your brain still knows that most people, you included, most commonly fail. For your information, the above Lewis Carroll quote that I read about how any road will take you there, for years, just to give you an example and be transparent, I told people that quote was by Henry Ford. I used to say, don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. That's a quote by Henry Ford. I can't tell you for the life of me how I came up with that. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
The Make Sense podcast is sponsored by the Make Sense Academy, co-created by both myself, Mika, aka the Chicken, and the Dragon. The Make Sense Academy is a live interactive community where like-minded, solution-focused, curious seekers of expansion gather daily in a mastermind setting with both Chicken and Dragon, where they have access to premium content, online courses, and powerful collaboration and networking, all for $24 a month. The Make Sense Academy and its members are solely responsible for funding the Make Sense podcast. So feel free to reach out to us at www.riseupwithdragon.com and check out the Make Sense Academy, risk-free, with a money-back guarantee. Now, back to the Make Sense podcast.
More or less. Back to that North Star idea and where we're heading. I told you that that's crucial because everything is going to be built based on that. And the idea of if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there is based on that. Got to do that first. Take a moment and answer this question. If I were to walk up to you and I had a magic wand, or I was a genie that you rubbed on a lamp and I came out of that, and I yielded the power to give you anything that you ask for, what would you want more of and less of? How do we determine and measure what a healthy response is? It's a matter of perspective from the individual. There's no universal one-size-fits-all way to respond to things. It's always going to be in support of serving your current reality and who you are. Remember, your perception dictates your response. Can you examine your answer to that question and evaluate it according to your learned reality or the one that you can see in that eye of the storm? Meaning, did you answer the question in accordance with your programmed wants and needs or the ones that serve your dreams, desires, and things that matter most? Do you see why it's so important to know what those are and also be in control of deciding where you want to go, not deciding to go somewhere that you've been told to go. So your perception now becomes a matter of preference. You get to choose, and you've learned how to separate yourself from your pre-programmed choosing system awareness, we could call that. You have a programmed system of choosing things. You're going to be pausing everything. Now you can start choosing to respond in support of what it is that you desire more of and less of in life. I think it's important to acknowledge not just where we want to go or where we want to get away from. I love to just say, what do you want more of and less of? It helps you better define where we're going. So it's crucial that you allow yourself to decide this. The rationale behind an adequate response is to evaluate your preferred state or outcome and choose the response that simply best rationally, logically supports it. Most people that are not moving forward towards their dreams are not struggling because they don't follow through. They just haven't allowed themselves to choose a destination and place a value on it that's worth fighting for. When looking at your desired state, this place that you want to go, and evaluating what it is that you want more of and less of, you'll see that it helps elevate it in value. And why is that important? Because value creates urgency, and urgency is what you'll need to do the hard work. If you find yourself not doing the hard work, it's not because you're not good at doing hard work. It's because the thing that you've decided to go after is not sexy enough. In his 1969 book, The Sciences of the Artificial, cognitive scientist and Nobel Prize laureate Herbert A. Simon mentioned using design as a way of solving problems. The problem-solving approach was known as design thinking, and it has evolved from the methodology used in the past. It is a process for solving problems by prioritizing the consumer's needs above all else. What's interesting about this process is how you begin to notice how insanely far off you tend to be in your responses. If you set a goal to lose weight, for instance, and get healthy, but in response to seeing and smelling your favorite food like pizza, do you eat it? And if you do eat it, how is that in support of your goal to lose weight and be healthy? A great question that I like to ask myself or the people that I coach is, what is it that you want more of and less of when they come up to that decision-making time? I want more happiness, joy, and forward progress. Then I want less frustration, distraction, and procrastination. Therefore, this person giving me shit or this pizza making me hungry doesn't in any way, shape, or form leverage my success and no longer applies. It gets negated. So I kindly say, thanks, but no thanks. Perhaps another example is me wanting to be or making decision to be more productive and less distractive. There's another more or less. I want to be more productive and I want to be less distracted. I stop watching the news and scrolling through social media and do more high leverage activities like reading and writing. Take note that your decisions and your responses will be less connected to the stimulus and more so connected to your desires. You might not necessarily be struggling. You might just not have properly set your goals. And I give that example of your head underwater and your desire for air. That's a perfect example of having nothing stop you. So focus more on that desired state. Let's talk about creating a new normal. In that space between the stimuli and your response, you're halfway there. Sometimes the perception, because it's like step three, that you think that you're like almost at the finish line. You're just halfway there. And in that space, you're practicing self-awareness, reframing, and being in the process of cognitive restructuring. This took place in steps 1 through 3. To overcome your program responses and replace them with intentional and goal-supportive responses, we need to engage in deliberate and conscious reprogramming. It's got to take time. So we're going to talk a little bit about what it takes to reprogram. No different than doing consistent bicep curls in the gym, where we voluntarily tear our muscle tissue with the goal of building the mass that we desire. You must decide today to start going to the gym for your mind. So let's talk about habits and routines. I've spent the last 18, 19 years of my career as a health transformation coach under the mentorship of a visionary man and creator of what's called the Habits of Health Transformation System. His name is Wayne Scott Anderson. I've learned from the master. The very idea of transformation from one version of your reality to the next simply doesn't happen in the absence of changing your habits. A lot of people don't recognize that. Making a decision to transform doesn't get you there. You got to change your habits. Habits play a very significant role in our responses to stimuli as well. If you're in the habit of responding a certain way, it's going to be very hard. Remember that by nature, habits are things that we do without knowing it. By consciously replacing old habits with new ones aligned with our goals, perhaps you can call them healthy habits, we can establish a solid foundation for executing healthier responses. Identify specific behaviors or routines that contribute to your desired outcome and just simply incorporate them to your daily life. I encourage you to pick up the Habits of Health System by Dr. Anderson. I'll put it in the show notes. Bar none, the best book out there on habit formation. Here's the thing about forming habits, though. It takes consistency, practice, and time. If you want a cool visual that demonstrates what you're up against in creating new habits, imagine that there are 1 million neurons firing off in support of your old habits. What that means is if you have a habit, an unconscious habit, just imagine in your brain, and this is just a small amount of neurons, there's 1 million neurons firing off in support of that habit. Then you see this new habit that you're starting today, like maybe drinking more water or choosing to not do this or not do that or and do this, firing off for the first time all by itself. It's just one neural connection, like a black grain of sand on a beach full of white sand. That one neuron is firing off and trying to recruit partners. The neuroplastic habitual change that you're seeking of creating a new habit is very, very challenging, and therefore it takes time and consistency. In fact, most literature on this topic states that the average is about 66 to 90 days to lock one in. So be patient. Interesting side note, if you ever had the opportunity or experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, or for that matter, any support groups like that, you'll notice that they celebrate everything, but 90 days is a big one. So here's a tool, and I mentioned it before. I created this new word called praction. I've used it before, and you've heard it in past episodes, but right now it's pretty relevant. It reminds us that we must practice being in action. That's what praction is the practice of being in action. And remember, become aware that when we first start going to the gym, we won't lose the weight and build the muscle, nor be good at it right away. In fact, we suck at it. But keep forcing yourself to go, and you will not only get the results you desire, but it will also become part of your unconsciously competent programming. There are four phases that people go through to get there. This is fascinating. This is work by this guy named Noel Birch. He was an employee of Gordon Training International, and he introduced this model that he called the four stages of competencies in the 1970s. The model is also called the conscious competence ladder, and that gives you a visual of a ladder. And it's got four learning levels. First, you start off unconsciously unskilled, meaning you're unconscious and you don't know what the hell you're doing. The second stage, when you start doing the work, remember that one black grain of sand on the white beach, that one neural connection of the new habit. You move from unconsciously unskilled to consciously unskilled, meaning you're aware of it, and now you're aware that you're unskilled, but you decide to do it anyway because of the perceived value. The third step is you become consciously skilled. So now you know how to do it, but you're still consciously volunteering and committing to it. But then the fourth step, which is the most powerful, when it locks in as a habit, an unconscious habit, is when you become unconsciously competent, or as he says, unconsciously skilled. So it's fascinating to look at these four stages and kind of like interlay them up with the four steps of the interface response system. You'll notice that it's all about first waking up to the fact that you've been asleep and inefficiently moving through life. Making a conscious decision thereafter to place that old system on hold, or at least attempt to, and start practicing new strategies that are in support of where we're heading now. Followed after time by finding yourself executing these new future state supportive strategies and habits without even knowing that you're doing it. That's what it means to create a new normal, is when you find yourself doing things that you're working hard to do right now against your programming. This is about healthy responses, remember. I'm not saying you choose a healthy response and everything gets better. Once you decide what the healthy response is, you're going to build a habit of it so that one day you won't have to put all this time and effort into making it the right decision. Emotional resilience is an interesting thing to ponder here. It's extremely vital for executing a healthy response when faced with challenges or setbacks. Practice your new stoic skills that we've been talking about and acknowledge the setbacks that are a natural part of any journey. Remember, the obstacle is the way is this idea of acknowledging that setbacks and letdowns and obstacles and challenges are an extremely valuable necessity and natural part of the journey, a main ingredient in the recipe for success, and view them as learning opportunities rather than failures. Practice makes progress, right? So you can cultivate emotional resilience through practices like positive affirmations, seeking support from loved ones, and practicing self-care. Strengthening your emotional well-being and resilience allows you to respond more effectively to obstacles and maintain focus on your goals. Why do we need emotional resilience, which is another muscle to build? You're going to face challenges. And there's this illusion that once you know what you need to do and you're logically doing things in support of where you want to go and all of that stuff, that you're not going to have any problems. Remember, we don't control the problems. We control the responses. So we have to build that emotional resilience using some of those ideas, and also just basically moving forward and practicing discipline and things like that. So that muscle comes into play as part of that new normal. So let's talk about accountability and support systems. Highly valuable. So accountability and support play a crucial role in executing goal supportive responses. Enlist the help of trusted friends, family members, or support groups to hold you accountable for your actions. It's the very reason that we created the Make Sense Academy, our sponsors. This is my wife's passion project. We knew that we could teach this to people, but if they go out into their groups, they're going to struggle. It's like this mere idea of being outnumbered. But we created this psychological safe haven where everybody's open, curious, and open to expansion. And we teach this stuff in there and practice it, much, much better results. We still have to learn how to operate on the outside world. We don't want to create another jacuzzi experience. So we actually take our members and we create outside events where non-members come. Like we have this networking group called The Big Idea that I do with my partner, Jules Loken. So think about that. That's one of the biggest problems is in the jacuzzi experience of this conversation right now, everything's fine and dandy and safe. But when you go out there into the real world, you know what happens. So we actually practice in the real world and then we come back and debrief. Isn't that fun? So back to accountability and support systems. Within them, share your goals and reason for them, allowing them to provide autonomous support along the way. Being accountable to others enhances motivation and increases the likelihood of executing healthier responses. Accountability is super important. The very reason that I follow through and practice and do all this work to create the healthy responses is because of accountability. We're all value-seeking missiles. I don't think, say, or do anything that doesn't have value. For me, it's all about my kids and my role as a father. So make sure that you have some form of accountability, whether it's a group, some sort of a coach, my accountability partners are my kids, because I always look at them and I tell them what I'm going to do and I'll never let my kids down. Executing a healthy and goal supportive response requires deliberate effort, self-awareness, and consistent practice. By understanding the brain's survivalist programming and implementing strategies like habit building, emotional resilience, and accountability, you can reclaim control over your learned responses, remember the ones that you had, and recruit the other millions of neurons that you're going to need to support your new supportive habits. Remember, reprogramming your responses is a journey. And it requires patience and perseverance. It's totally normal that you're going to face setbacks along the way. But by viewing them as opportunities, like we said, for growing and learning, you can stay focused on your goals and execute healthier responses consistently. I contend that the setbacks that you're going to face are not only lessons, but they are the dumbbells that you're lifting in the gym. I like to look at failure as training. Think about it. Don't you get stronger from it? So I hope by now you can see the importance of always remaining open to the evolution of your interface response system. Always be open to the change in support of the direction that you're headed at that time. You'll never be done with this work, ever. But now you have a system that places you as the author and the director and the creator of your own major motion picture. Here's an important disclaimer and potential warning. We have to stand guard and we have to look out for what I call flow burglars. So here you are, you know what you're going to do now. You're going to create this headspace and you're going to create these healthy responses. There's people out there that are going to try to mess it up for you. Here's an interesting quote from Horian Gracie. My daughter Lexi is just totally into jujitsu. So I love jujitsu. And I came across this beautiful quote by Horian Gracie, one of the best ever. He says, "Self-defense is not just a set of techniques. It's a state of mind. And it begins with the belief that you're worth defending." I heard the great Jim Rohn say something as well. He says, "We must stand guard at the doorway to our mind." It's a very bouncer-like statement from Jim Rohn, isn't it? What's interesting about fear is when you run from fear, it chases you. It gets stronger and it chases you. When you run towards fear, it has a tendency of getting weaker and runs away from you. So when it comes to things like challenges and fear, it's really that decision in the space that dictates what happens next. So I find this to be true. However, in the reflection of the analogy of the bouncer, we must learn to protect that which we hold precious. Now that you have this new upgraded interface response system that you're practicing, you must learn to protect it as those unwilling to do this work will be threatened by your enlightened perspective and lifestyle. You know that saying, they hate you because they ain't you. When you start working on yourself and you start climbing the ladder and you start obviously elevating, people are going to come after you. The reason why is because by you elevating and reaching new higher grounds, this happens very often in marriages where somebody grows and the other person doesn't, you highlight the fact that people aren't doing anything. So that's why we have a tendency of making fun of people that are like just ripped to shreds and like so excited and yelling and screaming on stage and stuff like that and have all this money. And we make up these sayings like, hey, take it easy. You guys are a little obsessive right now. They hate you because they ain't you. So be on the lookout for what I call the flow burglar. A flow burglar, by definition, is a person, place, or thing. So interesting, it's not just a person. There are things out there that can actually steal your flow. So it's a person, place, or thing with one purpose and one role in your life, and that is to disrupt and steal your flow. I'm telling you that there are forces out there, and I refer to them as flow burglars, typically showing up as people. Their role and purpose in life, I'm sure of it, is to take your flow. So what is flow? Besides it being where you get in this groove of making wise decisions, which is where you're going to get when you start exerting that traction of these four steps, flow is a state of being unconsciously competent with the idea of kicking ass and following through. So just imagine you're in that state. You're working the four steps of the interface response system. You're conscious. Mistakes are embraced as the way. Everything's going great. And you're just starting to have better and better and better days. Money's flowing to you. The right people are flowing to you. You're minimizing. You're getting rid of anything that doesn't matter. But then there's these things called flow burglars. The Psychology of the Optimal Experience author, I'm going to say his name wrong, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. If somebody knows how to pronounce that guy's name, come at me. I would love to know. And you got to leave me a voice recording and I'll give a prize to the person that gets it the closest. But Mihaly describes a sequence. He's the guy that came up with the science of flow. He describes a sequence of events that bring you into this, what he calls flow state. Ironically, this is what I love about the flow state. In my book, I put a really cool graph that I created. Ironically, it begins with the interface of some sort of struggle where you play tug of war between your programmed fight or flight response and that wise form of selfishness. The next stage after you overcome struggle is called the release stage. You can either make an effective release from the struggle by practicing intelligent decision-making. This is very interface response system. Intelligent decision-making using my provided tools, or make the inadequate release and begin wasting time oscillating in a rocking chair trying to get into town in the time-sucking, distractive hell of living in that drama triangle. So very, very important point there. Let's say you wake up and you decide you want to go into flow. It begins with a challenge. So what that means is you cannot get in a flow without a challenge. And what that means is the next time you find yourself struggling or in a challenge, it's a blessing. You understand? And if you can now interface with that struggle consciously using the four steps, you're going to be able to have a healthy release from that. And you're going to pass go and collect $200 and get into flow. Now, what's interesting about the flow cycle further is guess what happens after you've experienced flow? You go to recovery from it because it doesn't last forever. And guess what comes right up next? Struggle. So you're constantly in that cycle. According to author Stephen Kotler's book, The Art of the Impossible, A Peak Performance Primer, he came up with this idea of how to hack flow. And I just want to state this because it's very conducive with what we just said. We must learn how to navigate through the poop. I talk about this all the time, how God and the universe has mysteriously placed everything that we desire on the other side of a pile of poop. This is where it comes from. If you become a poop navigator, a successful one, and identify that phase of struggle, and the idea of choosing an efficient release from it is the way. So when you hear somebody like Ryan Holiday, who wrote a book called The Obstacle is the Way, that's what it means. It doesn't mean you have to do hard things to get forward only. It means that the hard thing is guiding you to where you want to go. You wouldn't know where to go unless the universe gave you something to struggle with. If you can reframe your mind about that, you want to talk about a healthy response system? Well, what if when the shit hits the fan, you start to smile? Do you think that you'd have more of what you want in your life? Interesting, right? That's an interesting debate right there, because I know some of you are saying, well, I don't want to get obsessed with in an unhealthy way, you know, not being able to just relax, you know, as if we have like immeasurable time. The desired state of a healthy interface response system takes over your previous or current unhealthy one as your new normal. That's the win. Implement it into something like this flow cycle, right? I love the flow cycle because it kind of shows you where the interface response system fits in and see how it helps you perceive, pause, assess, and respond effectively when interfacing with things like struggle and those flow burglars. Choosing a healthy response to the things that you're interfacing with is not as much a skill set as much as a logical and rational thing to do in support of where you have decided to go. The idea here is to practice. Remember, your 120,000 oil tanker was headed somewhere else until you showed up, and it's still committed to doing that. You make this decision right now, you got to gamify this sucker and have some fun. It's still committed to going where it was going. So let's start implementing and practicing the four steps of the interface response system. And let's continue this conversation. I'm always going to bring it up here and there. The first three stages of the interface response system placed you in a position for a more efficient response to happenings. However, this is uncharted water for most. So we must give ourselves grace and patience. And there are many stages in rewiring our response systems to become our new unconscious autopilot. That's what we desire. This is neuroplastic rewiring and habit transformation at work. And the return on investment is a new unconscious automatic operating system that is in full support of the outcome you desire at this time. Thank you and have an amazing day. We'll see you next time.
Makes sense.